This is Alaskan Legislative Review, a program of analysis and discussion of issues before the Alaska State Legislature, featuring the faculty and staff of the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. I'm your host, Scott Sterling. Our topic tonight is state aid to local governments and municipalities. Our guest is Mr. Carl Sepro, instructor in the Political Science Department at UAS. Welcome to the show, Carl.
Thank you.
I'd like to start off the program by asking you, what kind of aid does the state provide for municipalities and local governments? How extensive is it?
The state does provide, well, several different kinds of aid to municipalities in Alaska. They provide municipal assistance grants to the schools, as I'm sure you're aware, and they provide revenue sharing, plus some shared tax receipts. So there are basically four different kinds of revenue that are provided.
Now, what does a municipal grant mean?
Well, municipal grants are operating grants that are provided to the municipalities by the legislature. Go for, you know, maintaining the operation of governmental services to localities.
Is there do these grants come with conditions attached? For instance, does a municipal grant have to say this money will be used for transit services or some specific purpose, or is a municipality free to use the money as it wishes?
They're funded with portions of the state's corporate income tax. Basically, the legislature provided these in order to reduce the local costs, or the cost to the local taxpayer of governmental services. So they're not categorical type grants. No. Initially, they were slated by the legislature to reduce these local taxes. They're an important source of revenue at this point for the localities, and they have been.
Do you have an idea of how much money the state granted last year in municipal grants?
Fiscal 82, it was $87 million.
So it is a significant amount.
Right.
Okay, now how about revenue sharing? What does that entail?
Well, revenue sharing is money that's passed from the state according to a formula that's based on population, on the tax base of the municipality, and of the rate at which the municipality taxes. I believe it was 1980 that they, or maybe 81, that they provided a $25,000 minimum for localities that don't really have a tax base. Prior to this time, it was very low. If they went on a per capita basis, they received very little. I think around $5,000 minimum. So now it's increased to $25,000.
You mentioned that the money comes in revenue sharing on the basis of a formula, and in part that is based on how the municipality taxes its residents.
Right.
Now, does that mean if the municipality has a higher mill rate for a given tax, that it will receive less money from the state?
No, it means the opposite.
It means the opposite.
Right. That's what's very interesting, is that the intent of the legislature recently has been to reduce the local burden on individuals. But with revenue sharing, it actually encourages more taxes.
I see. So people who live in an organized borough, for example, like Fairbanks or Anchorage, may find that local authorities will try and raise taxes so that they could get more money out of the revenue sharing formula. Is that a possibility?
That's a possibility. It hasn't been a fact, actually. The local municipalities, and particularly the urban governments, have actually lowered their tax base. Fairbanks, I believe, has lowered. It's about 61%. They've cut taxes 61% since the inception of municipal assistance. That was basically the reason for municipal assistance.
So now that the state's faced with declining oil revenues, what kind of impact does the decline have on the aid to municipalities aspect?
It's kind of uncertain at this point. I mean, we're seeing some of that impact now in terms of what the legislature is doing, the governor's budget. You really can't say at this point in time, but it certainly is evident that there's going to be a cutback. The state is going to have to reduce some of this funding. One logical consequence of this would be for the local areas to raise their property taxes again.
Which would surely be an unpopular move.
Well, definitely be unpopular. It would be probably a little hard to do politically in some areas, yeah.
Okay. These revenues, these monies, come from the state's municipalities. Now, are school districts included in these programs, or are they funded separately?
School districts are funded separately. They're basically the third way of, that the state provides money to localities. And I'm sure you're aware that the school districts are set up under the boroughs, where they exist in a borough or in a first-class city. They're responsible or accountable to the borough in terms of their budget. But the state does provide funding for the operation of the districts and for school construction on a separate basis, school aid.
What kind of distinctions are made on the state level between organized boroughs and first-class cities and so forth, and rural areas that are not in organized boroughs? For example, can a small village in the bush be eligible for the same kind of aid from the state that, say, Fairbanks or Anchorage receives?
Well, they're eligible for the same kinds of aid. Again, the rate of local taxation makes a big difference in terms of how much they're eligible for. Most of the small incorporated areas in the unorganized borough just don't have a tax base. So just one basis for changing, the grants for municipalities. Because there is no tax base to speak of, if you exclude the Northwell Borough, naturally. There are different problems in terms of what they can do with the funding, and different long-term problems as far as the impact of that funding, the consequences of the funding. Municipal grants go to localities. Not municipal grants. We're getting into a different area, actually, capital grants, which is another source of state funding. When it goes to the municipalities, it requires an agreement that the state will pay for construction, capital construction, and then the localities have to pay for operating costs and maintenance costs. And it's one of the problems that a study done by the community Department of Community and Regional Affairs showed that there's capital construction going on in the unorganized borough, in the smaller incorporated localities, municipalities, that they're not able to maintain effectively, anyway.
And they have no given tax base or source of revenues other than the state for operating those projects.
Basically, there are some sources of taxes, but they're minimal. The tax base is not very good outside the larger municipalities.
What kind of problems are municipalities facing in the future as revenues decline? Will they be able to? Are local managers and local officials in the organized boroughs and first-class cities, are they now in the process of saying, as state revenues decline, we will have to make the choice of either raising an equivalent amount of revenues locally or else cutting back on services? That seems to be what we're hearing in the Fairbanks area, that the borough only has X amount of dollars and services have expanded quite a bit over the past few years. But now it appears that state revenues aren't going to be coming in that will keep that level of service as high as it is.
It depends. It varies from borough to borough. It depends on the local conditions. I believe that in terms of the Fairbanks North Star borough, a lot of the services are provided by service areas. And so they're not really user fees, but they are. Mm-hmm. You if you want a specific service, well, then you pay for it, and it's not available on an area-wide basis. In that case, then, there's probably a little question that those services will remain, and the borough won't be cutting back. I think one of the problem areas in terms of a decrease in state funds is in the area of schools, and that's already apparent in Fairbanks, as I'm sure it is in other places. When the legislative appropriation is short of what the local entitlement is, well, then you get into some political problems in terms of resources, and you have to make some hard choices. And it appears that's what's happening now. The borough is not, or at least has indicated that it's not going to be funding or providing additional funds for the school district. So you're finding cuts or threatened cuts by the district in certain areas. And I'm sure that this will probably be intensified if revenues drop.
What kind of state aid to municipalities and local governments was available before our oil revenues began to climb? Was it a very extensive program, or were the localities mainly dependent upon local taxes?
Prior to, I guess, about 69, the federal government provided most of the money to operate. I believe that it's in the vicinity of 50%, maybe more than that, that the federal government was providing. Local areas, well, I'm sure you're aware of this, that historically, local areas in Alaska have not had a very big tax base. So one of the areas that the opponents to statehood really focused on, that there was no tax base in Alaska, and it didn't really appear that it was going to develop in a big hurry. So there was a very strong dependence upon the federal government. The situation is really reversed. And in fact, Alaska now is atypical of the states because we receive so little in proportion to total expenditures from the federal government. Prior to that time, it was federal funds.
But in a switch around with the situation, are the boroughs now dependent on the state government for most of their funding?
That doesn't mean that there's state control necessarily of what local governments do, whether it's borough or city. But in terms of revenues, they come for the most part from the state. In 1980, the state was funding 74% of local government operations. I mean, that's as opposed to say prior to. To 69, the state was funding about 33%, and in 69 the federal government was providing about 52% of revenues. In 1980 they were providing approximately 12%. So yeah, it's been a massive change, turnaround, and at the same time the federal government has, since 1980, has been cutting in their revenue sharing. So while it's a decreasing amount and relative importance in Alaska, that cutback in federal revenue sharing has been happening all over the United States. You really can't expect to see it pick up any slack that might develop because of state decreases.
So then it's true that the local governments throughout Alaska are going to be faced with making decisions as to whether or not to raise taxes, because oil revenues will be declining. Has the legislature been strongly committed to keeping a high level of financing for local governments?
Well, it would appear with some of the bills that are being considered now that they're very concerned about maintaining the high levels of support for growth and naturally to provide for development in these areas. So in fact, there are some supplemental bills being considered now to take up some of this slack in the area of schools and in the area of revenue sharing to make up for the shortfalls that developed in the fiscal 83 budget.
Now, a lot of attention has been focused lately on this supplemental capital appropriations bill for FY83, which, that was part of the big debate over the one-third, one-third, one-third formula that's used. I wonder, are a lot of the projects that are in a bill like that, a supplemental capital appropriations bill, will those be what percentage of those projects will become the responsibility of local governments in terms of operation and maintenance?
In terms of, I'm not sure that I understand. Totally.
Well, say that there are a lot of capital projects in that bill.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them undoubtedly will affect local government operations. They might become the responsibility of local governments to operate and maintain. What's the state's responsibility here? When they fund these projects, do they have to consider the impact on the local governments? Do they have to say, we've got to make sure we fund the operation of this facility in our revenue sharing and municipal aid program? Or is it strictly a state responsibility?
Any capital construction grants that go to local areas, they are required to operate and maintain them after the initial construction cost. So the state provides the funding for construction. The local areas are responsible then for operating and maintaining whatever it happens to be, roads or buildings or whatever. In terms I'm not sure, responsibility for the long-term consequences of capital construction. It seems to be a real concern.
Okay.
They don't have to take into consideration whether or not a local area can operate and maintain it, which is not to say that they don't do it, but again, one of the major complaints that the local areas in the unorganized borough had indicated in the community and regional affairs study was that they were funded for a lot of projects that they didn't necessarily need, and that put some real burden on them in terms of operation and maintenance down the road. There was little concern for that. I'm sure that the legislature is paying much more attention to it at this point.
Well, now at the beginning of each legislative session, the Fairbanks North Star Borough and the municipality of Anchorage both go through a process where they prepare a list of capital projects and various other related items that they would like to see funded by the legislature. My question is, when those local governments go through that process, how do they figure operating and maintenance costs for those projects? Do they look at them and say, at some time in the future, we will be responsible for raising the revenues to operate and maintain these, or are they depending on the state to do it?
Well, they can't depend upon the state to do it, so they would have to take those those things into consideration. And I think maybe this is one of the problems between, say, an organized area and a highly urbanized area like Anchorage or Fairbanks, and some of the more rural areas, that those long-term costs aren't necessarily very apparent. Anchorage and Fairbanks have pretty well-developed planning processes, and they are aware of those long-term costs in terms of operation and maintenance. Given the fact that the revenues are declining, the state's revenues are declining, or at least the oil revenues are, that local areas are much more aware, particularly the urbanized ones, are much more aware of those costs, and they're starting to look at things a little more closely. What is it going to cost us down the road in order to maintain this particular service or facility? An ISER study was showing that this seems to be, one of the things that local governments are considering now. the declining oil revenues, or at least the threat of them, has got them thinking that possibly we won't engage in constructing certain certain projects because down the road we have to pay for them.
Is this kind of at the heart of the debate over the Project 80s project and request in Anchorage? Or there seems to be a lot of controversy going on between the municipality administration and Mayor Knowles and the legislature over changes in the Project 80 thing, which, to my knowledge, is the most ambitious municipal construction program ever attempted in Alaska.
Well, it's an area that I'm really not too familiar with, and you probably know a lot more than I do in that regard.
I wonder, would it be to the advantage of unorganized areas, unorganized boroughs, rural villages, to take steps to incorporate or to organize and therefore get more money from the state or get it in a more expedient way?
Well, again, this is an area that, you know, there seems to be a lot of controversy about anyway. It's certainly seems to be the direction of some of the people who would like to see development take place out in the unorganized borough. And it's at least had been suggested, you know, this was the way for local governments to really develop, was to take advantage, you know, of the state's revenues. Well, there's, as I say, a lot of controversy, and you know, in some areas there seems to be a definite resistance to organizing, you know, for those purposes, and an attempt to seek other kinds of revenues, or to seek the state's revenues in kind of indirect ways, you know, rather than in incorporating. Attempting to get it through, you know, some kind of grants to the nonprofits or the quasi-governments that David Case talks about.
How do you see the future unfolding for municipalities and local governments in Alaska in terms of state aid?
Well, that's a very good question. If I had the answer to that, I could probably be a millionaire. Yeah, it's really uncertain at this point. I think it depends an awful lot on the state's revenues. At this point, it's oil revenues. It depends on, you know, other kinds of development. But you know, certainly the local governments in Alaska have had it pretty good in terms of state monies. Whether or not they're, you know, this will continue is another question, and nobody really knows at this point. And the state makes projections as to what their revenue is going to be, and they seem to change on, well, maybe not a weekly basis, but a monthly basis. It's just really uncertain. I think one of the consequences might be the political, you know, maybe a change in the kind of politics that take place in local areas. I mean, certainly at this point, what you find is a very well-developed lobby, or at least, you know, relatively speaking, a well-developed lobby in Alaska on the part of municipalities. And, well, most studies suggest that in this respect, the urban areas look very much like those outside. You know, that, well, in terms of individual participation in government, it seems to be slacking off. And what you find instead is very heavy participation on the part of local government officials and lobbies of the larger interests in urban areas. Possibly with the decline in state revenues and therefore conflict over resources, you find more citizen participation. That's a possibility. But you can't really say at this point. It's very uncertain.
It seems like it would be a good idea for all local governments and municipalities to seek out alternatives for a tax base or for revenues other than the state. I know that in the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, they're looking to timber and fishing and mining. Mining seems to be looming on the horizon as an alternative source of revenues for local government.
Well, yeah, certainly development, you know, along those lines can provide more revenues. At the same time, you know, all of the local governments, or the majority of local governments in Alaska, have cut way back in terms of property taxes, sales taxes. There's no income tax at this point. So, you know, there are plenty of possibilities for financing local government services. Possibly what the reduction in state revenue might do is bring about a situation where we have to kind of prioritize services. And, you know, at that time, then you can determine what kinds of additional revenue-generating measures are necessary. But that might be one very real possibility, is reprioritizing, you know, what kinds of services are necessary by local governments.
All right. Well, it's a very interesting show, Carl, and this is an interesting topic in terms of what the future holds for all entities in Alaska that rely on state revenues. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
This has been Alaskan Legislative Review. Our guest was Mr. Carl Shepro of the faculty of the University of Alaska at Fairbanks, discussing with us the issue of state aid to local governments and municipalities. Alaska Legislative Review is a production of KUAC FM at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. I'm your host, Scott Sterling. Our executive producer is Carla Tanella. If you would like a cassette copy of tonight's program, please send $5 to Alaska Legislative Review, KUAC FM, the University of Alaska, Fairbanks, 99701.